श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्री सद्गुरु गौरांग की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण हरि हरि। सो गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू, वेलकम। Sringundicha Marjan Lila Ki Jaya. So today we are also celebrating Sringundicha Marjan. We will be speaking more in detail about that today in the evening. So in the morning, the invitation has been for continuing with our series on Brahma Stuti, which had begun a few months ago in Kansas. And today we are starting, if you will, the second half of the prayers of Brahma, verse 21st. Since there are 40 verses, and well, as you know, these prayers are the result of the what we call the Brahma Vimohan Lila, in which Brahma's poor heads are bewildered, spinning like nothing, after witnessing a very extreme degree of both Madhurya and Aishwarya. He's bewildered by both. First, he sees a picnic. He's bewildered by the intimacy of Sakya Bhav that he wanted, he longed for in the beginning of creation, but he didn't have in mind which were the implications of his request. So he asked Krishna, give me Sakya, and he said, Tatashtu, so be it. But when he had the trailer of the full implications of that, it was too much intimacy in one shot for Brahma. No, so he was bewildered by that, and he misbehaved in that connection. And then he was bewildered not only by the madhurya, by the intimacy, but the aishwarya, or the majesty of Krishna, after he expanded in the forms of the calves and the boys for a year, and eventually unlimited forms of Narayan coming from one single little Krishna, with universes and Brahmas worshipping those forms, and Brahma witnessing himself worshipping those forms. So a huge extreme degree of Aishwarya, as it has been shown anywhere else apart from Braj. Of course, only Brahma saw that. That degree of Aishwarya was not shown to the Brajavasis. That would be too disturbing. But Brahma had saw that, and after that he was totally converted, basically, in a deep way, and realizing, oh, the person I thought it was my... First, I met Krishna in the beginning of creation, my guru, my father, God. Then I met somehow Krishna again, but he didn't seem like Krishna, so I thought he was an imposter. And now I'm realizing not only that he was not an imposter, but that the Krishna I met in the beginning of creation, or how I get to appreciate him, was not the full extent of what Krishna is. And now I'm realizing who Krishna is actually, with all his intimacy and with all his majesty. So in this Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma is upgrading his understanding of both Aishwarya and Madhurya in Krishna. He's getting more informed, so he cannot say his ultimate goal. He's entering into the portal of Sakya Bhav. So feeling so much, bewildered in so many ways, he starts to pray in this section called Brahma Stuti, establishing the supremacy of bhakti, Krishna being the source of Narayan, very unique feature. God is an aspect of Krishna. Krishna being the source of all these Vishnus, Gunavatar, Lilavatar. And as the prayers progress, Brahma's own Vimohan somehow takes another shape. He's still Vimohan, because after every prayer, he's bewildered about the measure and depth and all pervasiveness of Krishna's form and nature. So it's another type of bewilderment now. He's not confused about who Krishna is, but he's bewildered about all that Krishna is. So every single prayer shows like a higher reach of that. Brahma himself is transitioning towards the Braja Lila through each one of these verses, basically. Each one verse shows a higher degree of Brahma's insight as to the nature, form, of Braja Krishna. So I'll make, that was a very brief recap of the whole thing, and I'll make a brief recap of last verse, because between one verse and the other there is always some connecting thread, so I'll go there for a while and then we go to today's verse. So In our previous class, we studied verse 20, in which Brahma is basically showing how Krishna is the root of all Lila avatars. Before Brahma established Krishna as the root of Guna avatars, before that he established Krishna as the root of each one of the Purusha avatars, and of course in between that he said Krishna is the root of Narayana, which is a very Gaudiya, bold statement. So Brahma is becoming a Gaudiya. So in the previous verse, he established Krishna as the root of all Lila avatars. So he say, O controller of our destiny, though you are unborn, you take birth amongst the gods and sages, and as well as humans, animals, and even among aquatics, in order to chastise the falsely proud and to show mercy to your saintly devotees. So again, in the previous verse, he referred to the Guna avatars, Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and now he's referring to Lila avatars, the sons of Bhagavan who come to this world to many functions, stuff, but mostly Paritranaya, Sadunam, Vinasha, Chaduskritam, Dharma, Samstapanartya. Protecting devotees, chastising the impious, and establishing Dharma. And he refers to Krishna here as Prabhu, which according to the commentators, have many meanings. One of them, you are totally independent, so you can descend in whatever form you like, and you are not limited by that. You can appear as a boar, as a fish, but you are still not a boar nor a fish. You can do whatever you like as a boar and as a fish, which generally are forms that, according to our view, are pretty limited according to prospecting into degrees of whatever consciousness. But you can appear as an So any animal you like, and still you are delivering the whole world as a boar. So that shows your independence, Swarat, also your unpredictability. I think Sanatana Goswami mentioned that. No, this means you are independent, means you are unpredictable. And you are unpredictable means you can do whatever you like, whenever you like, however you like, and still everyone likes you. Don't try to imitate that. We try to do whatever you like, whenever you like, however you like. After 5 minutes, we are put in jail, kicked out of home, signing divorce or something. Nobody wants to hear about us. Like, you're such a whimsical rascal or whatever. But Krishna can do that, and it works for him. So he's also called here Ajanasya, which means you are unborn. But also, our commentator said, Ajanasya means he because of whom there is no birth. In other words, when you hear about him, when you know him, you stop taking birth. We know when you get informed about the nature of your birth, quote unquote birth, you stop having birth. Like Krishna says in the Gita, Janma Karma, Chame Divyam Evam Jubeti. The one who knows the real nature of my appearance in this world does not appear in this world anymore. By understanding his birth, you take no more birth. That's the dynamics basically. And he comes to dispel ignorance, and the Acharya say, dispel ignorance mostly has to do with the idea that I already know everything about Krishna. That's ignorance. And Brahma is like, oops, no, I just thought that 5 minutes ago. No, I thought I knew everything about Krishna. I knew first one meeting in the beginning of creation. I had such exclusivity. I'm pretty smart for head, thinking a lot. I thought I knew Krishna. Now I'm realizing I don't have a clue who Krishna is. So he's starting to know Krishna. So he gives these different examples of being born in the society of gods as Vamana, being born in the society of rishis and Naranarayan, being born in the society of animals as Varaha, in the society of aquatics as Kurma, Matsya, and nonetheless still unlimited and all pervasive. So in connection to that, and before going to today's verse, our Acharya always again may connect one verse to the other, and many times in this mood of Brahma says something and Krishna may reply to this. No, Krishna may have a question here, and most of the questions are in the context of Krishna's being experiencing muktata in Vrindavan. No, muktata means kind of naivety, no, like innocence. Like because Brahma is saying to him all these fancy things, you are the source of Narayana, and Krishna will reply, what are you talking about? I mean, I'm just cowherd boy, I'm looking for my friends and calves, and he's still with a morsel of food, like looking, where are my boys, where are my calves? And Brahma's like, what's going on here? But Brahma started to praise him and tell him, you are the source of everything. And Krishna, I'm not the source of anything. So in this type of mood, Krishna is churning the heart of Brahma to prepare him further to enter Brajalila, to see if he First of all, if he passed the test of Aishwarya, if he really understands Krishna in Tattva, and on that foundation, if he can, he can forget that and enter in, into his band as a friend, if you will. No? So, in Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anucheda 39, Srila Jiva Goswami connects the previous verse with today's verse. And he says that at this point, Krishna may tell Brahma, okay, all these forms, Lila avatars that you were mentioning, different forms, are exclusively made of Sachid Ananda. They are not mundane animal forms or whatever forms. So if they are Sachid Ananda, they exist eternally. That means all the forms exist eternally, simultaneously. But you are unable to see all of them all the time. Right, Brahma? No, he's saying. I mean, Brahma was pretty bewildered at this point, but only bewildered by what he saw, which was pretty a lot. But still, Krishna saying, that's not all. No. I mean, there's further bewilderment if you want. So, Krishna saying, but you are not seeing all these forms, no? All these Varaha, Kurma, they are such as Ananda, they exist eternally, simultaneously, according to the logic of what you say. But you are not seeing them now at present. So, on which basis can you maintain the simultaneous coexistence of these forms? Where are they? And Krishna is looking, I don't see them. You see them? Brahma's like, okay. Now, in other words, if Krishna's form is all-pervading, which is an important point that Brahma tried to make during many other verses, Krishna's form seems medium-sized, seems localized in time and space, but it's all-pervading. And Brahma had just had experience of that a few minutes ago when all these unlimited Narayans and universes came and eventually wrapped up into Krishna's apparently middle-sized form. So he's immanent and transcendent at the same time. So the question that Krishna implies here is, okay, my form is all-pervading, and my other forms are also all-pervading. Where are all those forms? Where is my form as Ram, Swaraha, Kurma, etc.? You say that my form is Ajana. I am not born, which means my form is eternal. That means that my other forms are eternal. So if my form are eternal, also, on top of that, why take birth? How someone who is eternal takes birth? You say that I take birth, Rama, but you say that I am eternal, so help me making sense of who I am, something like that. And also, Brahma, you witnessed my certain Aishwarya some minutes ago by what you say. So that means that you saw it all, basically? Because if you saw all my Aishwarya, it means that my Aishwarya is limited. So... And Krishna is like, so why you say that I'm unlimited? Because if I'm unlimited, what you saw cannot ever be the whole thing. And also, you say that I expanded into the cowherd boys and the calves some minutes ago. So where are all them now? Because they are expansions of my forms, and my forms are eternal, not limited. So where are all those calves and cowherd boys that they were expansions of mine? Are they existing now? Existing now at present, and where? Because you are only seeing me now, right, Brahma? Brahma says, yes. So again, Krishna is churning Brahma's mind and creating some other layers of vimohan. And Brahma will reply to all the things in this particular verse, today's verse, which basically will establish. He will press the achintya button, but with proper... with proper reasons, no. He made sense of many things, and he has the right to press the chintya button at this time. So let's go to verse 21. I think you have some reference there for going through the Sanskrit. So it's in Upajati Chanda, which is the meter, particular meter of this verse. Most different verses in Brahma Stuti are different meters. You are there? So how we should do? Should I recite first, all together in the very first time?
You recite first.
Okay, just to get the meter and the melody. It's like this. I recite first and then we recite it all together. Kubeti bhuman bhagavan paratman yogeshvaro tir bhavatas trilokyam kvava katam ba kati va kateti Vishkarayam kritasi yogamayam. All together now.
Kobeti Bhuman Bhagavan Paratman Yogeshvarotir Bhavatas Trilokyam Kvabha Katamba Kativakareti Vistarayan Kridasi Yogamayam.
Okay, so I'll recite the translation of the verse and then we can go word by word and to some explanations. So you will have different translations, you have different editions, but somehow, of course, the idea is the same. It says like this. O greatest one, O supreme person, O self of all selves, O master of all yogic power, who knows where or how or to what extent or when you expand your Yogamaya potency and enact your activities within these three worlds? So that's basically today's verse, in which Brahma is again emphasizing the Achintya button, the Yogamaya button, emphasizing the influence of Yogamaya or Achintya Shakti for Krishna to be able to do all the things that he was asking Brahma about just before. And also, we will see how Brahma is addressing Krishna with different names here, and all of which have a very specific meaning in connection to the questions that he's presenting, rhetorical questions. But let's go first to the word by word. So, the first word is Ka. I mean, it says Ko in the verse, but when you take it separately, it's Ka. So, it means who. Then comes the question, Beti. Beti means nose. Bhuman is all greatest one. One, the first name Brahma is ascribing to Krishna, Bhuman. Then Bhagavan, which means possessor of all Ishvarya, or supreme person, basically, in this case. Then Paratman, self of all selves. Again, general meaning, then we will go to different possibilities of meaning given by Guru Goswamis. Then Yogeshwar, master of all yogic power. Uttihi, which means the pastimes of the Leela of Bhagavan. Bhavata means your, referring to the pastimes, your pastimes. Trilokyam, in the three worlds. Then the third line presents another series of questions. Kwa means where. Va means or. Katam means how. Va means or. Kati means how many. Va means or. Kada means when, iti, thus. And the last line says, Vishtaram, basically here comes the reply in the last line, Vishtaram, while expanding, Kridasi, means you play, you engage in Krida and your Leela. And the last word, Yogamaya. Yogamaya, I'm referring to Krishna's Yogamaya, internal potency. So that's how he will reply to all these questions of why, when, how many, how, Yogamaya, Achintya Shakti Bhatan, how all this is possible. So let's begin as I've been doing with this series. Before sharing the classical commentaries of Sridhar Swami, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and others, I'm beginning by sharing a commentary that our Guru Maharaj has written on the Brahma Stuti that will be part of his forthcoming book. So when I was asking him for permission, blessings, opinion about starting this series, he told me, oh, but I've written a commentary on the Brahma Stuti in my forthcoming book. So, of course, my question was, so the implications of that are that if you want, I can share that with you. I said, okay, great, thank you so much. So he gave me some also guidelines of how to make some emphasis and conduct some sections of it. So trying to follow into his footsteps, we will start by that. His commentary is called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvad. So he will be like some elaboration, which includes, of course, the content of some other commentaries in his own language and narrative. So it will be a brief in this particular, in connection to this particular verse, it's just a brief sentence that he's basically paraphrasing the verse. So he's saying, thus, Brahma rightly concludes, who can understand the play, Yogamaya, of your innumerable avatars, of you, the infinite being, sixfold in opulence, and hidden within everyone, yubiti bhumam bhagavam paratmam. That's the first line of the verse. So that's the brief bhavanuvad of Guru Maharaj in that connection. In which he refers again, this verse refers, the Brahma, the questions that Brahma is asking are actually rhetorical here. He already resorted to that particular device in other verses, like asking who on this one, and the idea is implying the question, the reply is implying the question. Who can know that? How we can know? How many of your lilas? And all this, of course, is impossible for anyone to understand unless Yoga Maya is being invoked and we are taking shelter of that influence. So when Brahma's questioning the things, he's implying no one knows the reply. No one knows. And that no one knows, as we will see, will even include Krishna. Interestingly. Your glories are such that you cannot even find a limit to them. You yourself are still discovering the extent of your beauty and charm and lila. That's why we have, as we spoke the other day, Golila, as a consequence of Krishna's exploring his own self and nature. And there has to be an eternal Golila because there's no end to Krishna's exploration of himself. So, the point that Brahma wants to make, and he already made almost in the beginning, Jnana Prayasudapa says, this Jnana Sunya Bhakti is very foundational to the Braj Bhakti project. You want to enter Braj, you have to be very clear about how impossible it is to grasp the fullness of who, what Krishna is. No? As a famous verse from the Katha Upanishad that sometimes our Guru Maharaj quotes, one who claims not to know Brahman, they know Brahman, or they know. And one who claims to know Brahman, they do not know. So, it's very, very kind of Socratic statement. No? Like Socrates says something similar. And he somehow had a glimpse of Brahman. We could say that was the reach of his insight in connection to the undifferentiated absolute. And he will say, the only thing I know, I could say, this was said in the zenith of his maturity, the only thing I know is that I don't know. And he said that in connection to Brahman, if you will, to what he glimpsed in that maturity. So what to speak if we go beyond Brahman and get to beyond Bhagavan, if you will, and get to Braja Krishna, how much that same principle applies to him. I don't know. So Brahma is realizing this. Remember, Brahma is someone who generally is known as knowing stuff. He knows. He thinks in every direction. He knows a lot. He's the greatest scientist of the universe. But here he's realizing, the only thing I know here is that I don't know. I don't have a clue or to begin even pondering the question. This is too much. And again, as we said, not only Brahma is bewildered about this point, but Krishna himself doesn't know the extent of that. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, where Krishna himself, I mean, Brahma himself says something like that before in the Brahma Stuti. He says, if someone says in this world, if someone gets to know, to count all the atoms on the world, that you can see, like, that's not possible. But even if someone can do that, they won't be able to count your qualities. That's not possible. Or if someone, he will see at the end of the Brahma Stuti, if someone says, I know everything about Krishna, Brahma implies, I will cross the street and offer pranam from some distance to that person. Like implying, you don't have a clue what you're saying. So Brahma himself is saying that, but Krishna himself is saying that, which is even more astounding. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, that's 11.16.39, Krishna is saying, even though over a period of time, I might count all the atoms of the universe, Krishna is saying, I could not count all my grandeurs, which are manifest in billions of universes. So Krishna himself is saying, I'm going to do that. I'm not able. What to speak of us? What to speak of Brahma? What to speak of us? And of course, the embarrassing contrast is sometimes we may try to do that. Or we may think we are getting closer to that. I know Krishna. I'm almost about to have the full grasp of what this Braja Krishna is about. As we were speaking in, in the U.S. with some devotees, sometimes we engage in this foundational sin, which is to take for granted Krishna consciousness. I know what's Krishna consciousness. I know. 40 years, 30 years practicing, senior devotee, of course. I know Harinam, Prasad, Sadhu Sangha, Bhagavatam. I know the dynamics, all what the protocol to follow and what's the meaning. I know those. Yeah, that verse I know. I know. I'm Rama. Well, the higher quarters will shout back at us, you don't know, you don't have a clue. Those who really know, they never will say that, because as Srila Siddha Maharaj will say, if you get closer to the infinite, you realize there is no limit for progress here. Pretty much. That's overwhelming experience. You are getting closer to something which you cannot claim, I have known that, I have attained that, I have captured that. I can just touch one point of one infinite line, and that point is infinite. So how much you can say, I know it. So that's the price you have to pay to enter the infinite. You can never claim, I know it. I have an idea of what this is about. You are to live eternally as an uncivilized fellow. That's what it means to be a Brajavasi. And they feel like that. And they're okay. They feel we are totally uncivilized tribal village people. But somehow, some good fortune is there and Krishna is born among our midst. Among a cowherd community. I don't know what we do. Probably Nanda Maharaj's prayers and Sukriti, and we are just happen to be there. Jadrichaya. But their own take on them is like, we're totally ordinary, as Guru Maharaj will say. And Narada will come and, a devotee is coming. Let's have Sadhu Sangha. Let's acquire some pious credit by his association. And Brahma is like, oh my God. No, I'm a devotee? What they are? No? So anyhow, this is like the backdrop, the emotional, conceptual backdrop of this Brahma stuti, you know, in which Brahma is feeling these things. Remember, 5 minutes ago he thought, I know everything, and this boy is an imposter. After 5 minutes, he goes from the extreme of he's an imposter to he's the source of God. Try to understand the contrast. From thinking, this Yamananda is a cheater. And after 5 minutes I realized Narayan is coming from him. Wow, try to imagine how we'll shift the relationship to that. No? Here we see Bhrigupada is following the footsteps of Brahma. No? Just jump from the swan, you put your head on the ground and start to cry and pray. So Brahma is carrying these insects now. So very, very important. It's important to keep in mind what's the emotional moment in which Brahma is and all that is happening, so we really can grasp what he's trying to say. And this is the foundation of our Gaudiya Siddhanta. This Brahma Stuti is given that. So it's very, very unique. Okay, let's go to some of the tikkas, the commentaries of our ancient well-wishers and guardians, beginning with Sridhar Swami, venerated commentator by Sriman Mahaprabhu, and quoted by the Goswamis constantly. So,
So Guru Maharaj's commentary was just this.
To this verse, yes. Yeah, okay. It was just only that sentence.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not like commenting separately on each verse. In some sections, he writes like a whole paragraph for 3 or 4 verses.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one sentence is for one verse. Another is more like in that.
Okay.
Some others are longer. Actually, this is one of the shortest indeed. Some others he may have written 2 paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Could you repeat that sentence?
The one from Guru Maharaj? Yes. Yeah, of course. It's kind of a paraphrasing of the essence of the verse. Thus, Brahma rightly concludes. Of course, this thus means because he's writing in the context of some other thing. Brahma rightly concludes, who can understand the play of your innumerable avatars, of you, the infinite being, sixfold in opulence and hidden within everyone? Referring to these 3 main names given in the first line, Jobeti Bhumam Bhagavan Paratman. End of the commentary. So let's go to Sridhar Swami's commentary, who presenting an objection from Krishna. Again, many of the acharyas will begin their commentary like, Krishna might object to what Brahma said in the previous verse. So Krishna is objecting here through the lips of Sridhar Swami. He's saying, Brahma, you say that I'm supremely powerful and independent. So why do I accept abominable forms like a fish and boar? Why and why are some of my avatars, how do you say in English, pitiable? For instance, Bhaman begged. No. And why does me, as well as these avatars, sometimes fear, flee, and so on? Krishna is known as Ranchor also. He runs from battle and so on. So Brahma responds in this verse, basically says Sridhar Swami, to all these possible questions that Krishna may present. And then Sridhar Swami continues saying that with different vocatives, beginning with the word bhumam, which means like unbounded or something, whose meaning follow one another, Brahma talks here about how difficult it is to understand Krishna. Remember, this is the main theme in this section. Because in the 40 verses, there are different sections of verses also, like thematic sections of verses. So Sridhar Swami mentions, the prose order is the following. Who in the three worlds knows your pastimes, where they occur, how they occur, when they occur, or how many they are? Some other chairs will present that in different order, but the point is all these questions are implied in the verse. And the gist of the reply to it by Sridhar Swami says, it's the inconceivable might of your Yogamaya. So that's how it's possible that you are performing all these unlimited lilas simultaneously in different forms. At the same time, all of those forms are one with you, non-different. And all this can only happen by Yogamaya. Okay, we have some kirtan in between. It was you, Frodo, not me. So that's basically Sridhar Swami's Bhavartha Deepika. I won't quote all the full commentaries of every acharya because some of them are repeating things among each other. So I will just share whatever it's unique about their commentaries. But all of them will reach this conclusion. No? It's all about your Yogamaya, your mystic potency. Let's share Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Vaishnava Toshini. This will be quite more expanded and interesting. So he says, someone may ask, among Krishna's, that may be Krishna himself, but he says, someone may ask, among Krishna's avatars, is there not one that performs actions like a normal person of this world? Like you appear like a boar, like a fish, like all this, like particularly. So Brahma replies with this verse, referring to Krishna's first Bhumam. Try to keep in mind the four main names I'm giving here. Bhuman, which means basically unlimited or unbounded here. Second name is
Bhagavan,
which means all Aishwaric, if you will, possessor of all this type of majesty. Third,
Paratma,
yeah. Which sometimes, of course, can connect it with Paramatma. And in this case, Sanatana Goswami translates as hidden within everyone. No? Because that Paramatma is inside everyone's heart, hidden there. And four,
Yogeshwara.
Which is, the implication is able to do the impossible. Master of all mysticism. Who can do what for others will be like just even unthinkable what to be. Sanatana Goswami says, in the sequence of names used here, they are gradually more difficult to comprehend and thus show the increasing excellence of the Lord. So Bhumam, it gets upgraded to Bhagavan. Bhagavan to Paramatma, Paramatman to Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara? Yes, Yogeshwara. And then Sanatana Goswami says that Brahma will conclude saying, you spread Yogamaya, Yogamayam Vistarayam. You spread your Yogamaya, which is a special Shakti of Bhagavan. Sanatana Goswami will say, this Yogamaya is Satchit Ananda Vilas. In other words, the form of play of Satchit Ananda, of existent consciousness and bliss. And by implying Yogamaya Vishtarayam, you expand your Yogamaya, that yes, your pastimes are real, your pastimes are not illusory, they're not Mahamayam Vishtarayam, but Yogamayam Vishtarayam. Your game, your play, although extraordinary, is conducted under the influence of your own internal energy. Sanatana Goswami refers to the reader who wants to know more, go to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The Uttarakanda, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The implications of this are expanded in detail. And the clarification here is, he's saying Yoga Maya is transcendental because sometimes the word Yoga Maya can also refer to a material mystic power. In the Bhagavatam, there are some verses with siddhis, yoga siddhis are referring as Yoga Maya, of the nature of mysticism or yoga. Also, Yoga Maya, Sanatana Goswami connects the word Maya with mercy. Maya means mercy. So Yoga Maya can mean also like mercy endowed with yoga, or mercy endowed with Aishwarya, he will say. So Yoga Maya means whenever you spread your Yoga Maya, you're actually showing a very unique mercy, which a very unique degree of Aishwarya. And again, Brahma is, he has seen that. He's not just like saying that, oh, you Yoga Maya. He has really had like full darshan of this reality. So Sanatana Goswami says, the gist in this case, if we understand Yoga Maya's mercy endowed with Aishwarya, is it makes sense that he is hard to understand logically because his acts are unlimited and filled with godly might, with Aishwarya. So we will see that this is the post that will be pounded over and over again. You cannot be understood by logic. It's impossible. Tarka apratishtanat, says the Vedanta. You have logic, but you use logic after revelation has reached you. If you try to go to logic towards that plane that is only can only be revealed, you will collapse. We were reading yesterday that from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. He will say, he has the key to open the door. You want to enter one door, but the door has a key, and you don't have the key. So the one who is on the other side of the door that you want to meet, he has the key. So if he wants to open, he can open. You're going to open from the other side. So that's a simple analogy, but it's very clear. You don't have the key. You can knock the door, but you don't have the key. So you can, and you should knock the door. Knock the door means you should cry for mercy. You should knock the door. The song says, knocking on heaven's door, right? There's one song with that title. It's not saying taking the key and opening heaven's door. You cannot do that. You just can knock on heaven's door. Continue with the song. I have to follow Guru Maharaj. Sometimes he will quote some songs in that connection. I have my own generation of hits, so that will be a different kind of example. So we are not after a stairway to heaven. We want a stairway from heaven. We're going to construct our own stairway. That was Ravan's attempts, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe Led Zeppelin was inspired by Ramayana in composing that song, Stairway to Heaven. You're going to construct it. You may try, but again, you don't have the key. So you will, the stairway will collapse. But stairways come from above. Our Oha Panta, descending path, that is possible.
Like the Tower of Babel.
We have so many of these notions in our different traditions. And Sanatana Goswami said, therefore, Bhagavan is inconceivable. And therefore, if he's inconceivable, he's none different from his Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila. So he's a Chintya, Chintya Guna, Sarupam. His Lila are inconceivable. He's inconceivable, his Lilas are inconceivable, basically. The point is making here by Brahma. And Sanatana Goswami concludes his commentary saying, to understand all these different pastimes, Krishna Lila, inconceivable Krishna Lila, people need to humbly approach and learn from your devotees. And thereafter, automatically, they will be delivered from this world of birth and death. He concludes saying, Nasti Eva. Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Gatirandat. There is no other way, he says. So that's the only way you can basically understand this Lila. Because you can know about the Lila, you can Google Krishna Lila, you can be informed about Brahma Vimohan Lila, but that's not reaching you through the medium of the devotee, you won't understand. That's a different thing. You can receive information, but information is not the same as transformation. And Brahma is experiencing deep, deep transformation here. So, yeah. So that's an important point for us to take clear. For example, the Vedanta Sutra is saying, what's this third aphorism? Shastra Yoni Tvat. So Shastra Yoni Tvat means, of course, it says Atato Brahma Jignyasan Janmadiyasi Ayata first. You have to inquire about the Absolute because He's the source of everything. And He's the source of all inquiries, basically. All questions regarding everything are included in questions about Him. So how to know about Him? Shastra Yoni Tvat. Shastra is the womb that gives birth to knowledge about Brahman, about the Absolute. And one may ask, but and the commentators will clarify. Okay, the example of the womb sometimes is connected also with the example of the egg. No, the egg comes, and okay, there is some birth there, but the egg has to go through some process of the animal's mother sitting on it for a time, and eventually will come the real birth. So similarly, Guru and Shastra will give knowledge, but we as disciples have to humbly have a particular stance for that knowledge to become an answer to our questions. Before, you may have a question, and the Guru may reply. It doesn't mean that you got the answer. If you don't do your part as a student, he gave the answer, but you didn't get the answer. The answer will come when we go through the Pranipat Pariprashnina Sivaya that Krishna says in the Gita. The homework that is corresponding to the disciple. You have to surrender, you have to be humble, inquire from the proper source, render service. Then you will hear Gurudev and you will feel, oh, this is revelation, this is answer. If not, you may feel like, I'm not satisfied, or I'm not satisfied, this is not answering my question. But what's the answer to your question? What Gurudev is saying, or the attitude that you also have to have in that connection. So these things are important, because if not, everything will remain achintya. And as we were speaking, achintya button, be careful with that button. There's place for pressing it, but be careful with that one. And Jiva Goswami is mentioning in his Sarva Sambhadini, Tarkalabhyam Shastraika Gunatvam Achintya Shaktitvam. Like basically, achintya means that thing which is unintelligible through dry logic. But if you go to Shastra, you can understand. So achintya means something will remain inconceivable until and unless you turn to revelation. And again, you turn to revelation, Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, with proper attitude. Because even if not, that will remain inconceivable. Brahma is an example. I mean, he turned to Krishna, he had good attitude, but still there was something else remaining, and that was he was not fully able to understand revelation. When revelation came to him, picnic, Krishna, friends, falling formality, that's pretty much a revelation. But the revelation made him collapse, basically. And after that, he developed a higher degree of humility. He fell from the swan, as the commentators say. He abandoned his status as Deva. He put his head on the ground of Braj, and then further revelation still coming. So we can only know Bhagavan through revelation. And even in that case, we cannot know him fully. That's an important point. You can never know Krishna fully. He can never know himself fully. That's an important point. Whatever we can know will be revealed through revelation, but it's not that, okay, now I know Krishna. Again, do not make that mistake ever. Now that I know what Krishna consciousness is about, do not take that for granted. You will need to go through some conversion period again to rediscover. I was speaking with some second generation devotees in US some months ago, and many of them, almost all of them, were telling me that, which was interesting. They all tell me, I mean, Maharaj, we were born as devotees, so we never chose bhakti, in one sense. I mean, we were already there. Of course, you can go to previous lifetime, but they were saying, in this lifetime, we never chose ourselves, okay, I will be a devotee. I was a devotee from birth, and everything around me was bhakti items, if you will. So, in one sense, also, we took that for granted, and we get accustomed to that. Oh, yeah, Krishna Prasad, can Guru visit, and this and that. But at one point in our life, we realized we need to choose being a devotee. We need to, and now we are experiencing this rediscovering of Krishna consciousness, because we thought we knew, but now we are realizing we are just beginning to understand what's this about. So this same point, do not take that for granted. Okay, let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary, mostly from Lago Vaishnav Toshani, but also he's sharing some nice ideas in his Bhagavad Sandarbha. In one section, he's going through all these, many of these verses. We have time?
Yeah.
Okay. Prado? Okay. He's giving blessings also. Jiva Goswami is saying, in view of the difficulty in comprehending Krishna's divine pastimes, Brahma here is addressing the Lord with four different epithets, each embodying a solution to each one of the four questions posed. So now comes this interesting connection. Brahma is addressing Krishna with four names, again, Bhuman, Bhagavan, Paramatman, and Yogeshwara. And he's posing four questions as well. Where, how many, and when your pastimes take place. So now Jiva Goswami will connect the four names that Brahma is using to reply to the four questions he himself is posing. Like in plain, Brahma is presenting four questions, and he's replying those four questions himself to himself by invoking four specific names of Bhagavan. So now we'll see, almost conclude our talk, seeing how these four are interconnected. Okay. So let's begin with the first question, which is the word qua. And qua means where. So Brahma is asking where. Where all these pastimes take place. Again, he's speaking about unlimited lila avatars, unlimited lilas, unconceivable. So he will reply to the where question with the name, first name, which is Bhuman, which means, again, unbounded or great, unlimited. So he means with this, Jiva Goswami says that he refers to all you who include unlimited forms in your own divine form. So all these forms that execute so many pastimes, all of them come from your own original form. So the idea is, there's a primary form, Krishna, avatari, Krishna's two Bhagavan, Swayam, and all the other forms aren't contained within him simultaneously. Akrura prayed similarly. When you know, when Akrura was taking Krishna and Balaram out of Braj, out, quote unquote, and the chariot stopped for a minute, he was reciting some prayers, and eventually he saw Krishna and Balaram in the chariot. They say, oh, we'll wait here in the chariot. And Akrura went to recite Sandhyavandan, and he saw that Krishna and Balaram were there. He returned. They were there in the chariot. He returned to the water. And now he saw an antashesh with Vishnu lying, and he was like, okay, what's taking place here? So, and then he said, Bahumurti ekamurtinam. Bahumurti, many forms, ekamurtinam, one form. So from this one form of yours, Bahumurti, so many forms are coming. So Akrura had a vision of that. Again, it's not just, okay, I understand that, I accept that, I saw that. Brahma is in the same situation, he saw that. So in other words, Brahma is implying here, nobody can understand where Bhagavan will manifest a particular pastime, because he's all-pervading and he can manifest any form anywhere. In other words, the replies to the four questions will be achintya. No? The reply to the four questions is there's no reply to this. Where you will manifest your pasta? Anywhere, whenever you want. But we don't have a clue when, where that will happen, when that will happen, how that will happen. So he's using the word bhuman. Again, bhuman means you're all-pervading. So since you're all-pervading, basically you can manifest a particular pastime and form in any particular place whenever you feel so. So basically that's the idea here. You will transform whenever you, like the example of Bhamandev, Jiva Goswami is saying. Bhamandev, before appearing as Bhamandev, he manifested to Kashyap and Aditi as Vishnu. And he said, okay, I will appear as Bhamandev. And from Vishnu, he manifested as Bhamandev in the spot. It's not that the second person appear. So he just, the example is given sometimes of the actor. That he's like performing, hiding himself and acting as different people, but it's the same person. Of course, the actor is limited. These examples are limited. The actor is limited to the costume, you say? They cannot change their bodies. They just have changed the makeup and costumes and extra hair. A Bhagavan can become a boar, matsya, a dwarf. So, another level of acting. So, that's the first question and the first answer with the word bhumam and the word kwa, where. The second question is, how? Katam. How do you manifest all the different forms of pastime? And the reply will be with the second name, which is Bhagavan. And Brahma, with this implies, you alone know how these pastimes take place. Again, the question is how? How these leelas take place? Brahma said, I don't have a clue. But you know. Only you know. Because you are Bhagavan. In other words, you are endowed with all powers, with all Aishwarya, and you can know how that takes place. No? One famous example is the lifting of Giriraj. I have this nice picture from drawing by Charagrahi in my room. it's yours. I mean, it's yours. Namaste Girirajaya. Yeah, it's your place. That's your landmark. You do not in deep denial of your attributes. Yeah, drawing. I say maybe a painting, a drawing, whatever. Yeah. So Krishna's lifting Govardhan. So that's a very interesting lila about how did he do that. Not only how he was able to sustain a mountain, but to begin with, how you lift a hill from the earth. I mean, nobody knows. How Krishna just first, he didn't say, okay, float or something. You just know that he lifted the hill. You have to go to get underneath the hill first and lift the hill, uprooted, and then lift it. Like he said, like he did like a mushroom. And he picked it. I don't know how he put the little finger below. Again, how? Brahma said, I don't know. I'm trying to think about that. And he did that keeping it intact, not actually uprooting the whole thing. You see that this mountain, it's not taking what's below the earth and so on. And also, even if somehow that was possible, how can you sustain such mountain by sustaining that in one single point only? No? Generally, you have to have pillars and columns here and that. And he was just, you can see how much this can, I mean, and the whole, and it was a perfect balance, equilibrium. If you ask it, sorry? Okay, that's a Brajavasi reply. Brahma still has not upgraded to that level. Still he's saying, I don't have a clue. No? And the Gopal will say, wait for, you have to grow. You have the answer to that. But still, he has a way to go yet. No? He's a sadhaka going for it. So we know Saragrahi can school Brahma, but what to do? He's here asking that. So no civil engineer will know how you can sustain a mountain one single finger, one speed. Such a heavy weight concentrated in one single point. But Bhagavan did all that and the mountain never collapsed. Everyone was there for a whole week. They have such fun and so on. So again, this is an example of how you perform those pastimes. And Pastime Brahma will say, no clue, but you are Bhagavan. You can do it. So that's the second question, the how question, with the name Bhagavan. The third question is kati. Kati means how many, and that's connected to the third name, which is Paratman, or Paramatman, if you will. So Brahma implies, you alone, how many pastimes do you perform? How many? And Brahma, of course, is implying, you alone know how many. In case you know, I don't know if you know, but if someone knows, it's you, Brahma is saying. It's not me. He's making this one. I'm realizing it's not about me. It's not me, the one who knows here. Because you are Paramatma. Paramatma means, interestingly, not only the super soul, but some of Jiva Goswami says, you are the self or the source, Atma, of Para. And Para means, he means here, all other avatars. He connects the word Para with other avatars and Atma with source or soul. So you are the source of all other avatars. So you, in case someone knows, the quantity of this pastime done by so many avatars is the source of those avatars. Who are you? Avatari. So again, the idea is, it's impossible for the mind to reach such an idea. That's the logic behind the question, how many? And the reply is, you cannot count them. Because when you ask, the very question implies this limitation, how many? Number. There's asankhya, as Guru Maharaj will say, quote in the Bhagavatam, asankhya lila avatar, asankhya divine descents. So if unlimited pastimes, unlimited avatars, naturally there are unlimited pastimes performed by those avatars. So you have unlimited qualities, and therefore you perform unlimited acts simultaneously. Unlimited, unlimited, unlimited. And it is so that even that form of Bhagavan, who is called unlimited, Ananta, Ananta means without an end, unlimited, if you will, he is trying to enumerate those forms and lilas and qualities with his unlimited tongues. Until today, I received report today in the morning, till today still Ananta Dev cannot find an end to that. I have the latest updated report, still Ananta Dev is not only not finding an end, but is finding further reach to them. So that's the point made with the word Ananta. Krishna is so Ananta that even in his form, officially called Ananta, that is officially his job is to enumerate and depict the Anantaness of Bhagavan, he's not able to do so. So that's in connection to the how many question regarding to the name Paramatma or Paratman. And let's go to the last question, fourth question, which is when, kada. And this will be connected with Yogeshwara. So when your lilas will occur, when? So what Brahma again is saying, only you know that. I do not know that. Because you are Yogeshwara, and the translation here is, being Yogeshwara means you pervade all three phases of time. Phases, you see? No? Past, present, future. Mm-hmm. You go through all of them. Therefore, you are not limited by time. So you are beyond time. The question when has to do with time. You are beyond time. So you can do whatever you like with that. Like when Krishna showed Vishwarup Darshan to Arjuna in the Gita. And he said, what do you want to see? I know you want to see this. You want to see the outcome of the battle? Here it is. And he created this, like, how do you say in English? These balls that you see the future.
Crystal ball.
Okay, it was simple, that's what I thought. Crystal ball. So he saw the future. Krishna showed him the future, like implying, I'm totally aware of these three phases of time. And then Jiva Goswami said, the cause of this, of Krishna being Yogeshwar, having these potencies, he connects Yogeshwar with Yogamaya. The last name is Yogeshwar, and as we know, the last word of the verse is Yogamaya. So here we have the two. Krishna is ultimately Yogeshwari because Yogamaya is there. And Jiva Goswami said, Yogeshwari means Mahaswarup Shakti, which basically means the great power of his nature, the Mahashakti of his Swarup, the great potency of his own nature. And that's, which is, he says, this Mahaswarup Shakti is responsible for accommodating the various forms in one original form. all these things that otherwise would be impossible, many forms in one form and so on, this is possible through yoga maya. So whenever you decide to manifest a particular form, whatever it may be, according to the maturity of the worship of your devotee, you manifest that particular form. From bhakti yoga paribhavita ritsaroja says about, according to the mood or the maturity of one, and Brahma is realizing that here, because Brahma has reached some maturity in his bhajan, and that's putting him now in front of the object of his worship. He met Krishna at the beginning of creation. He expressed, "I like some sakya, you shook my hand like a friend. I feel, oh, this is nice. I feel attracted towards that prospect." But still he didn't have the full darshan of Krishna in Sakya Rasa. So he continued engaged in bhajan and performing his duties as Brahma. And when the moment was ripe, according to the maturity of his bhajan, he was faced with the object, the perfect object of his aspiration, which is Krishna in Sakya, which corresponds with a particular lila, stage, associates. So this is what he's saying here at the end. No? When that will happen, another way of saying is, when you will show certain lila, he will say, well, when the devotee's maturity in bhajan is there, I will manifest in the corresponding form according to the nature of their bhajan. So this is the logic behind the question, when? When I will see Krishna? Well, the question is, which Krishna? If you don't know how to reply that, it means that's not the moment yet. But when through your bhajan, through imbibing certain bhakti samskar, you have a particular Krishna in mind, in heart, and a particular worship conducted under that aspiration, there will be a corresponding revelation in time of that Krishna. And that's what Brahma is, the experience Brahma is having now. He's seeing Krishna in full Sakyabhav here. Let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sarartha Darshini. After having gone through these four questions and the four corresponding names of Krishna. Okay, so he says like this. Again, he goes back to Krishna probably saying something to Brahma in between verses. So Krishna may say to Brahma, "It is well known that I, Krishna, have taken birth only to dispel the earth's burden, that Rama took birth only to kill Ravana, and that Sukla and other avatars appear only for the purpose of setting forth Dharma at those various times. But the birth, for the sake of terminating the wicked arrogance of those who consider themselves learned, is not so well known," Krishna is saying. Because Brahma said that in the previous verse. You come to destroy the arrogance of the wicked. And the arrogance is they consider themselves, "I know." Again, Brahma is mostly speaking for himself here. But Krishna said, that's not so well known in Shastra, that there are avatars who come for that in particular. And Brahma replies, therefore, in this verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, "Yeah, that's true, that's not so well known. But the point is, no one is able to entirely know the purpose of a particular pastime of yours, beginning from your avirbhav, your appearance, nor the scope, nor the time they occur, nor how many they are." And then he says, "O Bhumam," he goes to the first name. That he makes now an interesting connection between the four names, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, from another side. He begins, "O Bhumam," that is, "O you whose form is infinite and pervades the world." Then comes Bhagavan, "O you who, though you are Bhumam, you are replete with six types of godly might." So you appear in the world, but also you are full in Aishvarya. Then comes Paramatma, "O you who, even when you are Bhagavan, you are also of the nature of Paramatma." You are Bhagavan, but also you are Paramatma. And finally comes Yogeshwara, "O you whose great, great might, such as being Bhumam, can be realized now only through Yogamaya." So Brahma is basically, by mentioning these names, mentioning Bhuman, Bhagavan, Paramatman, you are unlimited, all-pervading, impossible to understand, but Yogeshwara, you have Yogamaya, and by Yogamaya there is some hope for me to understand something about you. And he is having that experience at that moment. Brahma is experiencing, I'm starting to understand you finally. But it's not by my four big heads, it's by your yoga maya. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes his commentary. Just in case. Some extra udipana. Brahma then asks, in this connection, Brahma then asks to himself, but how is it possible, he asks to Krishna, to satisfy simultaneously all your devotees at all times with your transcendental pastimes? And then Brahma replies him back to himself, by your inconceivable potency, Yogamaya, which perfectly carries out the work of presenting different pastimes to your various devotees at the suitable time. So this is basically the idea of this verse. Brahma is presenting these different questions, replying himself to them by addressing Krishna through these different names, and concluding, whatever is impossible, inconceivable, totally beyond even my grasp, all that can become possible by your yoga maya. And that's what I am experiencing now. And again, with this is Brahma is gaining further access and further glimpse into the reality in where yoga maya fully plays out, which is Braj and his aspiration in Sakya Bhav. So he's getting closer and closer. And as we will see with the remaining verses, the prayers of Ram will turn more, will become more and more yoga mayic, if you will. At the end, he will just end up praising Vrindavan and aspiring to be born in whatever form there and glorifying the fortune of the Gopas. In the beginning, he's more establishing Tattva Siddhanta, and gradually Tattva Siddhanta being properly established, lay themselves to Bhava, and at the end, Brahma is lost and found in his in his ideal. So I'll finish today. We are getting closer to 1 hour, 8 minutes, so that will be a 108 auspicious moment. And in next class, that will be in a few days, I don't know which day, on Brahmastuti, we'll continue with this series of prayers. Verse 22 will kind of, next verse will conclude one section inside the bigger section. And Brahma will turn from Yoga Maya, also will analyze Mahamaya next, in the context of analyzing how Krishna still is inconceivable. So, I don't know if there's any questions before finishing, commentaries.
I have a quick one.
Question may be quick. Answer, I cannot tell you. Those are the most dangerous ones, the quick ones. Yeah.
That's right. Like the chinta of these lilas, like lifting over them. Are we encouraged to meditate on them? And kind of like a koan of Zen Buddhism, you just sit with a certain inconceivability. Is that helpful or encouraged?
Yeah, we were speaking about that the other day in Bulgaria, that also, despite this being inconceivable, and of course you cannot just catch that with your head or your intellect or your logic, nonetheless, we should try to use our head as much as we can, as Gurmash will say, even in relation to topics that are inconceivable. We should use our head a lot, so our head reaches its, push our head to its limits, I will say. So the head starts to tell you, my friend, stop here, please. That's the ultimate reach I can take you. Now you need to take another train to enter into the next destiny. This is my furthest capacity I can reach. So you need to experience those limits. Because if you don't experience your own limits, you may not be so, how to say, equipped, informed, as to feel the necessity of taking shelter into another means of knowledge. Because still you may think, I can know it. You follow, so it's not that you, I mean, you understand, I cannot understand Krishna with my head. It doesn't mean you won't use your head. You try to use your head, and sometimes you need to prove the limit. Maybe we already did that before meeting the devotees, or and we are almost going crazy by trying to understand everything without revelation. And we finally found revelation and realized, oh my gosh, such a relief. No? But it doesn't mean you stop thinking. No, I mean, you use your logic, as Chaitanya Charitamrita say, how is the verse? Sri Krishna Chaitanya Dai Karaya Bichar Bichare Kariya Chitte Chavich Pavichamantkar. If you are interested in logic and argument, apply that to the feet of Mahaprabhu, and you will experience chamatkar or astonishment. But I think we can have a glimpse of of the unlimited by trying to push our limited capacities to their limit. Again, in a sustainable way, I'm not promoting you go crazy or collapse. But sometimes we need to explore how limited we are by using whatever we have as much as we can. At the same time, understanding this is not enough. As Guru Maharaj will say, try to make effort to obtain grace, but try to act as if grace doesn't exist. But everything depends on your effort, while actually knowing that everything depends on grace. but the way you will invest your effort, your personal capacity, that will be as if grace does not exist. So you will, because sometimes the idea of grace can be invite to complacency. Oh, Krishna's mercy, and no effort. No. We were speaking sometime, he will speak about some other paths where grace is not that emphasized, and some practitioners or monks or whatever, they do so much effort, so much sadhana, so much investing themselves, because for them that's the only thing that it is, or the main thing it is. And he was saying, we should learn something from them. They apply so much in sadhana with such determination and discipline, and sometimes we may not be doing that, and we should do. It's not that, on some level at least. Of course, grace is there, and that's the greatest thing, but you can use that narrative as an excuse only, not to do all that you can do. So in that sense, I will say, yeah, you can think about these things to the point that you collapse, basically, to the point that you realize, I cannot enter there, like Srila Samara said yesterday, even in your wildest imagination, even your imagination is limited. We may think, no, whatever, I can imagine whatever I like. Try to do so. Try to imagine about whatever you like. Be careful. maybe better do not do that. We never know where we will end. But even if you try, you'll find there are some limits. It's not that, okay, I will just, without being a devotee, I will just let my imagination flow in every possible direction. I'm sure you won't get to the conclusion of the whole Krishna Leela in your imagination, because it goes beyond beyond imagination. So, but again, sometimes some of us may need at certain moments to really pound the post of how limited these methods are. So sometimes you need to a little bit like, okay, I'm pushing more, and my own system is showing its limits. And when you have a clear realization of that, you can really pray for grace. Because if you are still investing some, how to say, exaggerate trust in the reach of my mind and intellect, you won't be able to pray from a sincere place. And that's why Kunti Devi said, Janmaishvade Srutasri Virida Mana Madapumam Naibarhatya Vidatum Baitama Kinchana Gocharam. She's saying, those who are born with great high birth, opulence, knowledge, and beauty, they cannot approach you with a sincere heart. You are only approached by those who are materially exhausted. Tvam akinchara gocharam. That's a very nice verse. And that has to do with this. Unless you exhaust. I mean, and that doesn't mean you have to become homeless and live in the street. But you exhaust the reach of your material resources. Whether it be knowledge, beauty, money, you may still have all of them. But you are fully aware of, this is totally limited. This is a joke in comparison. I cannot... There's no currency to enter into Parabhyam again. This is not the currency I can buy my place there. But you have to realize the limits of those things. Because if not, so much hope is still invested in them. And Kunti Devi say, as much as you are doing that, you cannot approach Bhagavan with a sincere heart. Your prayer won't reach that far. Because still you are divided in so many other directions. No? And so on, multi-branched. But the more you get, I don't want to say frustrated, but just sometimes we need that. Frustrated after some attempts of having some hope in something and realizing, oh, this was not it. It's actually shedding light on where is the real hope. So, Krishna is akinchana gocharam. He's who can be approached by the materially exhausted. So materially doesn't also means, again, proving the limits of our different material capacities, logic, intellect, what to speak of the grossest expressions. So, Kunti Devi ki jai. Bhrigupada has one commentary.
It's a very small comment, but it's something that struck me. I liked very much Jiva Goswami when he was connecting the four names.
That was great.
And he said that Yogeshwara meant that you're the master of the three forms of time, past, present, and future. Mm. And it's quite interesting that if you take Yogeshwara, the word Yogeshwara, not to mean the master of yoga, but rather as the Ishvara of the yoga system, Patanjali's yoga system. Mm-hmm. But one of the main definitions that Patanjali gives for Ishvara is that Kalina Navacheda, not limited by time.
Mm-hmm.
And Bhagavatam sometimes does this. Bhagavatam sometimes refers to these different philosophies. So I thought that was a nice thing. I checked if Jiva Goswami says that explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't,
so. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the contribution.
It sounds like you had a question.
All right. I will try to ask it. I was trying to put it in my head. It's a very simple question, but we are reading now Bhagavatam already for some years, and whenever Vishnu is appearing to devotees, it's usually some trouble moments for them. You always, after a few times, you know what will be written. Yellow clothes, beautiful hair, garland, and that's these qualities which we can kind of see. We lucky, but and then it's said that it's like unlimited qualities. So why they are not sometimes writing it differently for us?
Because those are like the defining qualities of Vishnu. I will say that a few things, because also we can say the same with Krishna. I mean, if I put here a peacock feather and a flute, and I don't tell you anything about anyone, you say, what does this remind you of? Is it Krishna? So naturally, you go to these very defining qualities, that when you go to Krishna, okay, peacock feather, flute, Vishnu, four arms, and this and that. Which doesn't mean that's the only thing they have. Doesn't mean they are the only ornaments or the only qualities. But those are the defining ones. So, and you mentioned yourself. When Vishnu's description is coming, we already know what we will hear about, if you will. So we could say, okay, that repetition had an effect, that you already know who will be the person and which are the defining. That's a fixed idea in your mind, because it's just mentioned once, and you may not be able to differentiate. And also, I will say that even, and I think that's also part of the Bhagavatam's intention, even if it's speaking over and over again, and sometimes you may feel, oh, there again comes this detailed description of the things that I already know about. Then no. Bhagavatam is saying, let's see if you pass the test. Oh, you're following Brahma again. You be ready for Bimohan. I already know about Vishnu. I know who are those ones. And the Bhagavatam even may imply not only those are not the only attributes or qualities, but even if you just want to speak only about them, only about the four arms and the color of the cloth and the bumblebees and the type of earrings and the color of the... Even only if you want to concentrate in those few ones, they are unlimited. It's not that unlimited only means more qualities different than those, but that quality in itself is unlimited. So, so sometimes the emphasis is we want to enter into an unlimited listing of other qualities, but let's concentrate on these few defining ones which are unlimited. And for you to understand how they are unlimited, I mean, you have to apply yourself in sadhana, receive corresponding grace, and have the experience that Brahma is having. Like, okay, I can be meditating on this particular aspect of your qualities forever, because there's no limit to that. like, for example, when we hear, as we said the other day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's main eternal service as Kamal Manjari is to prepare camphor lamps for eternity. Are you ready for that, Sarah Gray? We can just, all of us, camphor lamps after 2 hours, 3 hours. It's enough, Maharaj. You can continue. It's midnight, Maharaj, a little bit tired. But the idea is to keep doing that for eternity. And you're like, what? No. So it means still we are not able to grasp eternity in that, if you will, unlimited experience into one single aspect of Leela, if you will. But the same applies with Guna. One single aspect of one quality is unlimited. And that's why you never get tired of that. No? That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur can, till today, do camphor lamps and still is finding newer and newer things there. It's not like when, at least if we, ghee lamps, can we change a little bit something? That's not happening. So, yeah, I will make that main point, that sometimes the Bhagavatam will externally seem like repeating too much certain things, but wanting to make this point, A, these are the defining qualities of this personality, and two, there are other qualities apart from those, but mostly three, those few ones that are the defining ones, are unlimited. So, we are taking you till this point, the Bhagavatam is telling you, now you apply yourself to sadhana and receive further revelation by doing your homework, basically. Because sometimes that happens in Shastra. Some description is it, and they say, and there are more, and this unlimited. And the rest, I mean, if you are an eager reader, you will feel, okay, how can I access that remaining unlimited experience? And Bhagavatam will describe in other sections how you should conduct in practice for that to happen, for revelation to happen. So I hope that helps, Anagrahi. Okay, Nora has a question?
Yeah, so, like, at the same time, Krishna's old problems are eternal,
yes.
But still he can come up with new problems.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like Asintya, or is it like, can he come up with problems that nobody really has seen before, but
yeah,
still they are eternal, just hiding somewhere, or he's manifesting them out of, like...
Yeah, again, the main point here also, for we can say yes, we cannot say no, Krishna cannot just, he's just limited to the Das avatar, or you cannot just five more, up to 108 or something like that. It's a Sankhya, but and it's saying he has unlimited forms. Unlimited means, again, it can be unlimited in quantity, unlimited in quality. You can speak about only one form and that form is unlimited in itself, but there are another different forms which are unlimited in quality. But over and over again, it's important to pound this post, that is, Krishna's forms appear, and we mentioned that today, in correspondence to his devotees, to the necessity of the moment, to the love of the devotees. So, and of course, there are different types of devotees and different types of love, and that's why he's taking different forms. You know, we go just try to tie those two things together a lot. It's not just he's taking different forms because he's bored about the form he has till now. No, let's take a new one and let's taste what it means to whatever. As we said the other day, it's not that he will appear, I don't know, playing drums or something, no? I mean, modern drums, I mean. He's playing drums in some little... But my point is there will be some parameters according to rasa sensibility, also to reciprocation with the devotees, sutrek shita, as the verse says in the Bhagavad, sutrek shita patana nunata. No? There is some context regarding revelation, regarding feeling. So the forms of Krishna appear as a reply to the devotee, the feeling of the devotees. There's an important point to make always. No? So Krishna's form is carved out the bhakti of some devotees. Some devotee has some desire to worship Bhagavan in some form, that form manifests in a particular way. So, yeah, of course, we can say there is place for different types of worships, different moods of worships, different nuances even, because we say the form of Krishna, but even when you say the form of Krishna, there are so many forms of Krishna. Braja Krishna, Mathuresh Krishna, Dwarakesh Krishna, and in Vrindavan you have the form that Yashoda contemplates through the lens of her Vatsalya, the form... So there's even many varieties of forms between different, for each devotee, technically speaking, each single devotee will see a different Krishna. It's not that every gopi sees the same Krishna. It's not that every gopi sees the same exactly Krishna. So technically speaking, whatever every devotee will be seeing, it will be a different form of Krishna. So that will be, I will say, the main point. And since there is individual unlimited devotees with individual unlimited shades of love, there are individual unlimited forms of Krishna corresponding with those particular unique expressions of love. So I think that's mainly the point, and not so much that, I don't know, Krishna has to appear as a giraffe necessarily, and he has to appear like a dinosaur, and he has to appear like, again, if the necessity arises in some particular lila, that may happen, like with Prahlad.
So in a way, it is in him, the possibility to do it, it is in him eternally.
Potential and the possibility is there. It doesn't mean that it will happen in every single way that we may imagine here, because... Yeah, that's the thing. Now, if not, we fall into the same thing again. We, from our particular condition, limited side, okay, I will worship Krishna, I will create my own, and I will force him to appear as a rat, a meat, half rat and half dog. And again, this is nice. There's Srutekshita, there's some, I mean, Shastra is revealing some particular forms and modes of service and ishtadevs. And I would say we should, those are the, if you will, the options revealed in Shastra. And inside those options, there are unlimited possibilities. So I think that should be more than enough. And of course, one is receiving. It's not that also one is picking. No, it's not that like we go to the supermarket, oh, let me try Ram Lila, let's go now, let's worship. It shouldn't be conducted in a whimsical way, but actually it's coming. Bhakti herself is coming through us by her own, what's the word?
Volition.
Sorry?
Volition.
Yeah, why not? So, Jadricha, yeah, so we honor that. And according to Sangha and the Bhakti Samskars, our worship will be defined in that connection.
When it comes to like avatars, it said that they all have their Vaikuntha planets.
Mm-hmm.
So is it like, can he manifest an avatar which has no planet yet, and then it's just like...
So is every form eternal? I guess that was your question.
Yeah, that's what we made. Every form is eternal. Mm. Mm. And each one of them have their own... Rupa Goswami makes that point in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, that every particular form of Bhagavan has their corresponding abode. And that will be a main point in connection to why Mahaprabhu has... There has to be a Nityanavada, because every form of Bhagavan has a corresponding abode in eternity. So Mahaprabhu is not just a form of Bhagavan. That is avatari in his most upgraded version. But yeah, we could say that. But again, we are speaking again about eternal things, unlimited things. So over and over again, we will... And it's okay, it's good. We will do that, but also it's good that we realize there is a limit to how much we can reach that plane through, which again, we are using that as much as we can. And what it shows us, like, okay, stop right there. That's what Brahma has concluded. As Guru Maharaj likes to say, Gyan prayasudapasya namanta eva. Brahma is saying, reject totally this idea of trying to understand everything through your head and put your hand in the ground. And by doing that, you will know much more. By doing that exercise with your head, so much more knowledge and revelation will come that by trying to analyze reality from up to down. Mm-hmm. Which again, we are trying on some level, we are trying to test the limits of our own. But there is a point where we should acquire deep realization about how limited this system is and how unlimited that is as well. And that will equip us for having a more integrated, educated, like, surrender and approach to praise, to mercy and to prayer, yeah. Okay. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Sadguru Gauranga ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki
jaya,
Gaur Praman, Hari Bol,
Shri Pad Bhakti Pranaya Padmanabha Maharaj ki jaya.